Well, that should have been recorded. Hi, my name is Bill, and I am an alcoholic. And it's good to be here tonight. You know, I'd like to thank you folks for inviting me here to Visalia. You know, I live in Fresno. I actually do a lot of business down here. So I'm here quite often. And I like your town, you know, city, you know, but not the Fresno much more. Anyways, my sobriety date is September 21st of 2005. My home groups are Woodward Park Village Group and Rule 62 Men's Stag in both in Fresno. I enjoyed your readings. You know, I was thinking on the drive down here about you know, chapter 5 and how it works and how that's often read before meetings. And the first sentence, you know, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And often I think, you know, it should just end right there. You know, my story is for a long, 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 long time, I was one of those people that was constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. You know, I always thought I had a normal childhood. Parents drank, you know, but didn't get drunk, you know, went to bed, all that good kind of stuff on time. The reality is, you know, I've got 6 sisters and no brothers. So I was, and they're all blondes and blue eyes. And so I knew from a very early age that I was different, you know, to say the least. You know, here's my one original thought, you know, in AA. And it's, you know, we're supposed to share in a general way, you know, what it was like or, you know, what happened. What it was like, what happened, what it's like now, and, you know, for me, what it was like, you know, here's my one thought, is words that end in I-O-N, and it pretty much sums up my life. It starts with, like, suspension. Their first was probation, suspension, termination, expulsion, and incarceration. You know, now, they gave me, you know, 40 minutes to speak, so, you know, we'll move on, but, you know, did the Catholic school thing, was raised Catholic, you know, did the altar boy thing, had a father that was like really good in athletics, played pro baseball, you know, and I learned at a real early age, you know, I heard my grandsponsor first mention it after I was sober for a while, that unknown fear, you know, that I believe, and I guess I'll just speak for most of the males. You know, and by the way, you know, congratulations to all the chip takers. You know, that's really, really cool. You know, it's a good deal. And anyways, I learned at an early age, you know, that that fear that I would never, you know, I would never be good enough. No matter what I did, it wasn't good enough. And I learned to run and hide, you know, from reality by any means necessary. I mean, I got to be honest here, and I'll try my best, you know, to speak from the heart and shut the head off. You know, that's always a good thing for someone like me. And it's something that I was never able to do until 2005, until, you know, my higher power, who I call God, intervened in my life and gave me the ability to be honest with myself. Because I needed help doing that. Because the pain, the denial, the fear was too much. But, you know, I did that Catholic school stuff. I did the altar boy stuff. I was made to serve, you know, mass, like at 6:30 in the morning on weekdays and no one else would, you know, Dad dragged me down and, you know, I didn't think it was too bad of a deal by 7th grade. you know, it gave me an opportunity to hit behind the altar and chug that wine and munch on all those hosts and feel good before I went into class. You know, I did some I did some bad things to that particular religion, and I've done my best and my part to clean that up over the time I've been sober. You know, my first arrest was for a four-fingered lid at the age of 13. And if you know what that means, then I guess that ages you and ages me too. Green leafy substance, you know, they call marijuana. And this is a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, other substances are a big part of my story. But I tell you what, alcohol took me to a place that I've never been before. You know, and for me, you know, alcohol did it without me ever seeing it coming. Needless to say, I learned that term expulsion from a Catholic high school in Fresno. My solution to that was to move in with another family, and I let my parents know that. And I was 15 years old, and the day after I told them I'll be leaving, you know, I'll be moving in with my best friend in Sacramento, and with his family. My mom came home with a really big suitcase, you know. In my family, you didn't get your luggage till you turned 16, you know. And I was like, well, where's the love here, you know? But it wasn't the case, you know. People were tired of me. I mean, it is what it is, and it was what it was, and I've lost jobs, I've lost wives. My first rehab program was in 1988, and when Pacific Gas and Electric, you know, I tend to be a little specific sometimes, not quite so general, but anyways, when they terminated my employment. You know, they offered me rehab. Nah, man, I don't have a problem. You know, okay, you're fired. Hey, I'll go. You know, in the 80s, you know, there was a lot of white stuff going around. And, you know, that was my problem. And so I was in this recovery center and, you know, decided that, well, since I had a problem with this certain substance and, smoking a couple joints in the day room, you know, wouldn't be a problem. Back then you could smoke cigarettes inside, you know, they had a smoke heater, but they didn't quite see it that way, so boom, out the door I went again. Now, I'm real grateful for that experience in 1988 because I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd been told I was an alcoholic probably since I was maybe 18 years old, I don't know, a long time. So what? You know, that was my attitude. I mean, I knew, you didn't know. You know, you call me whatever you want to call me. Doesn't matter. I'll prove you wrong. Life was nothing more than, life is a constant battle for me. You know, to prove I'm right, you're wrong. You know, I got terminated from that rehab program, and over the years, where I'd end up back at mom and dad's, you know, like a lot of us do. There I'd be on my bicycle in the morning, pedaling my bicycle to a morning maintenance meeting in Fresno. And, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, you people, I like you people. You were nice. You spoke well. You know, my only problem was that, man, if I give myself to what they're talking about, you know, I really lose my individuality, is the way my mind turned it, you know. Once again, I learned I was probably running from my fear, you know, of admitting that I was powerless over anything. I brought up my father, you know, and, you know, I will say this, that uh, since I've been sober, you know, and I had a real bad relationship with my father. Now, the last 10 years of his life, and he passed away almost exactly 2 years before the day I got sober, we were able, actually from one of those times I ended up in jail in 1997, and I was able to forgive him. But what I've learned from being around this program is that the man did the best he could. You know, and I truly cherish the last 10 years of our relationship where we became business partners, you know, and friends. Now, he never saw me sober. Do I regret that? Yeah. But you know what? It's all right. I believe he's in a place where he knows today. In 2005, once again, I found myself, well, it was September. See, it was Saturday. There was a Fresno State football game. Myself, my wife, and our granddaughter were going to go. And, you know, as anything, you know, I had to get property primed. And we had an argument, you know, my wife and I. Granddaughter, wife didn't go to the game. I went to the game. I found myself, I ended up in the ice plant, you know, next to the stairs. It didn't spill a drop of beer. You know, shit, I learned a long, long time ago, you know, you do anything, you can't spill that drink. And I said, it's really good alcoholic, you know. I said, oh man, somebody may see me. You know, I mean, I run a business now. I'm important, you know. I gotta get the hell out of here. So, a couple days after that, I was arrested again. And that day, as I look back, was the start of me being able to finally give up the fight. You know, it was just done. I was arrested, put in jail. Prior to me being arrested, I was told I was going to go to jail, but I didn't leave the house. You know, I packed up my bags. I packed up the dog food, because I wasn't going to leave my dog. And you know what? I ran out of energy, man. I took that dog for a run at the schoolyard by our house, and I came back. And I knew I was going away, and I said goodbye to him. I went to bed. I woke up. The police were there. I went to jail wearing an FBI shirt. That wasn't too smart, you know. I got to jail, and I said, man, I don't fit in this place, you know. I'm in fucking slippers, you know, and I'm wearing a shirt that's an FBI. More importantly, you know, what I remember is the Fresno County Jail. I remember seeing two guys sleeping with each of their heads on one side of the toilet. And I said, man, I'm 44 years old. You know, I don't fit in here. What the hell am I doing? And I became willing to change. You know, at the end of my drinking career, and what I remember about it most is the friggin' loneliness. For me, this is how it ended. You know, there were no more bars. There were no more going out. There was no more good times. I don't remember a lot of good times about my drinking and using, because the problem was I always had to wake up sometime or some day. And I knew that what I was doing was wrong, you know, to other people, to myself. But here's how it ended up for me. It would be, I was in my garage with ESPN on the television, you know, a fifth of tequila, Jose Cuervo, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 Budweisers, didn't really matter, and a bowl of peanuts. So I had to get my nutrition. And I spent a lot of time bonding with my dog. You know, my dog was the only one that liked me because I'd feed him them damn peanuts. And then hell, there was multiple nights I went and slept with him in the doghouse. I'd wake up at 3 or so in the morning, I had shit all in my face. I preferred to sleep on a diving board. You know, I really did. I did that quite often. The wife, you know, I would, you know, she was an alcoholic. You know, she drank in the morning, and I remember her saying about 6 months before I got sober, you know, we really need to do something about it. And I was like, you drink in the morning, you're an alcoholic, you know, do something about it. I didn't do that. I had to go run a business, you know. And I could run a business. That's about all I could do. And then I got off work, and you need to stay out of my way. And, you know, so I'd give her her 2, 3, 4 shots and send her inside. And little did I know, she had her own, her purse was rather, there was a lot of clanging going on, you know. So she was doing her own thing inside. But I got out of jail, and, you know, I had seen a doctor who kept talking to me about triglycerides and pancreatitis. And the last time I saw her, she told me these were the highest triglyceride counts she'd ever seen. And I remember feeling like I was a dead man walking. So I did what any good alcoholic does. I went and got a bottle. But that, all these things combined for me to finally get me to a point of surrender. You know, I was finally having health issues. And so, you know, I did have a DUI also in my past. Just one, you know, pretty miraculous. Now, I did drive to the Selma police station to get that DUI. Estimated miles per hour was 0, you know, on my ticket. The DUI officer of the year for the Selma Police Department, you know, told me I couldn't drive, but he told me to go wait in my truck. See, I was framed. Told me he was going to be watching me. So as I'm sitting out there with my bottle and my beer, and I said, that fool really watched that. Turn the headlights on and off, you know. Start the truck up, shut it off. You know, and I'm waiting for my wife to come pick me up, and I'm sitting out there, you know. So I see her go by, and she misses the turn, so I back my truck up, face it that direction. He walked out and gave me a DUI. So, you know, believe me, I should have had plenty, but anyhow, get out of jail. I signed up for, I went to the place called the Beacon House, and it's in Pacific Grove. And I remember before I went, you know, something in my life had to change. I didn't know what. I didn't know if it involved quitting drinking. I didn't know what. But I knew something had to change. You know, it was time to grow up. And in a lot of ways, that's one of the many gifts Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. You know, it's allowed me to grow up. A lot of those years, you know, they were adulthood by number only. I was determined to have an open mind when I went there, and I was willing to change. You know, when I was pretty new, I heard that little acronym, you know, HOW, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And if you have those, you know, you have a pretty good chance. Well, for me, the honesty came later. The honesty came probably at about maybe 7 days there on a weekend. You know, Chapter 5 talks about how we reach a turning point. For me, my turning, one of them, I was sitting in Cannery Row on a Saturday. I'd walked down there, and they got this courtyard, and they're playing music. And it's the second time in my life I'd ever ordered from Starbucks. So I was really, like, proud of myself, you know, because I'd never, ever done Starbucks. And I sat there, and I just watched these families and these people. And I realized I didn't want to die alone. I realized I wanted to live. And I was so grateful I had sunglasses on, because these tears just, I never ever uncontrollably cried like that. But it's what I needed. It was one of those moments. And about 10 days sober, I got up early in the morning. I always get up really early, 3:30, 4 o'clock. I was smoking a cigarette outside. I started having these thoughts again in my mind. I was right there at that turning point. You know, beer and pot, I never hurt anyone. And then this side of my head says, man, how many times have you said that over your life? And I just thought I was going to have an aneurysm. And I got to be honest, you know, I really don't know what happened for the next 3 hours. I believe I looked up at the sky and I just said, help. I know I took a walk at 6 o'clock that morning. I know I took a shower afterwards. When I got out of that shower, the first 3 steps made all the sense in the world to me, and I had yet to this day have a desire to drink. I was just gone. And that's when I admitted, I could be honest with myself, you know, I needed help. God gave me the ability to be honest with myself, admit my way wasn't working. You know, to me, that was sort of my bottom. I've been homeless before, you know, I've done all that other stuff. For me, that was, you know, I had an ego. It was false, man. I had false ego, I had false pride. It was all a facade. I've heard around here that the saying, you know, egomaniac or the inferiority complex, and that sort of sums up the way life was for me. So the obsession was lifted, and it was very, the relief was incredible, but it was also very scary, because if my way wasn't working, well, what did I have? The only thing I had was what was up there and you people in this program. And it's worked so far. You know, life is good today. You know, I heard a few things when I was in that recovery center that helped me to this day. And I really try to keep a simple program. You know, keep it simple, stupid. I heard that a lot, and it makes sense to me. One of the first things I asked my counselor guy is, why am I always so pissed off? And he said, I don't know, but anger masks pain. And that shut me up. You know, that was one of my first gut shots. I've learned anger also masks fear. I was told that if I want to stay sober, sobriety has to be the most important thing in my life. To me, that makes sense. Because without my sobriety, I don't have my wife, I don't have my family, I don't have my business, I don't have friends, I don't have anything. For me, that works. I remember the day that I told my wife that. She's about a month and a half behind me in sobriety. You know, and I saw the pain in her face. You know, she wasn't number one on the totem pole anymore. Now, we laugh about it now because, you know, she'll say the same thing. I was told if I work half as hard at staying sober as I did at drinking, then I have a pretty good chance. For me, the drinking, there was a lot of damn work involved in that, and life is hard. You know, to me, sobriety is an easier, softer way. Now, I don't believe there's really an easier, softer way to work the program. But for life in general, man, sobriety is so much easier. I got out of that program. I came back to Fresno. Well, I got a temporary sponsor over there. I said, how many meetings do I have to go to? And he was an ornery little Scottish dude. He made it simple for me. I said, how many meetings do I have to go to? He said, how often did you drink? Every day. You know, the only days I didn't drink, man, it was like far and few between, and it had to involve my mother, you know. I just, that line that I had Mark open up with, you know, that's one of the first things I heard around these rooms, that my secrets will kill me. You know, I know, or I believe, at least for me, you know, if I don't change the way I live, that I'm doomed to drink again. And I was told, I guess I'll get this out of the way too, you know, they say there's suggestions in AA. I don't listen to, I don't take it that way. To me, they're directions. You know, not necessarily orders. But I know that I don't know this shit, you know, when I got here. It's painfully obvious, you know, all I had to do was look at my life story. So I was told, you know, you might hear, you know, you're as sick as your secrets. To me, it was my secrets will kill me. You know, I heard things like, listen for the similarities and not the differences. You know, it's real easy to listen for the differences and hit the door and hit the liquor store. That's easy. You know, for me, and I've heard this isn't my line either, you know, not much of what I say is, you know, it's borrowed. My grand sponsor's name is Phil L. He has like 34 years sobriety. He has terminal cancer, but he's hanging on good. It takes cojones to stick around here, you know, it really does. You know, I was told things like, go where we go and do what we do by old-timers. And that's what I did. And when I got sober, I was separated from my wife. I was told I got nothing to bring to the relationship. She got sober. She wanted me home right away. You know, I was told no, you know, until I worked my ninth step, or you'll hear stuff about a year. All I know is the way I got nothing to bring to the relationship. So, and trust me, I did not enjoy making the mortgage payment and paying rent. That wasn't fun, but I did it. And I was told to be grateful that I was able to do that. And at the end of the month, you know, it was really hard to be grateful, you know. But you know what? It's all for a reason. You know, I don't know, 6 or 9 months sober, she wanted me home, and my sponsor had me talk to a guy that has quite a bit of time, and I said, man, I don't know what to do. And he says, well, he says, do you believe in God? And I said, yes, I believe in God. He says, do you think God knows? And I said, yeah, I think God knows. And he said, do you think God will let you know when it's time? I said, yes. And he said, there's your answer. So 2 months after that, my little apartment was burglarized. While I was at an AA meeting, it's a good place to be. And 2 weeks after that, it happened again, and this time I was in there sleeping. So I got on the phone, I called the wife, I said, God's telling me it's time to move home. And and all of a sudden, she goes, be careful what you ask for, you know, kind of thing. Times go really quick, you know. I hope I'm probably all over the place, but I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, this is where I fit. I don't know anybody here, but I do know everybody here. You know, this is where I belong. This is where people can relate to me, or I can relate to them. This is where I found love. You know, I heard a gentleman share about it once at a meeting, and really, you know, that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. You know, we love each other enough to care. You know, we're sick people, you know, trying to make it through life one day at a time. For me, you know, I never, there's a few things that I don't do that I never have done. Since I've been sober, I don't ask why. You know, I used to hear new people at a meeting say, why am I out? And it just makes me shudder. You know, for me, it's just a fact. It's like electricity. You know, that shit rolls downhill. You know, I'm an alcoholic. It's all it is. You know, I don't have to spend time thinking. I really don't like, you know, I try not to do all that thinking. You know, the chapter in our book is called Into Action, Not Into Thinking. I did a whole lot of thinking before. So I was sitting there with my, you know, Jose and... Oh, goddamn, I just remembered how you could get a 30-pack of Budweiser and I could put 7 fists in it. The garbage can days? You know, and you got to put newspaper around all them bottles so that garbage man doesn't hear all that clanking, you know. And I know I'm not the only one that ever did something like that. It just amazes me. You know, I tell you, it's like, oh my God, the things that I used to think were important. oh yeah, you know, it was all about image. You know, I got to tell you guys, you know, there are no more... You know, I've watched some very dear friends of mine in this program go battle cancer. It was cancer for all of them. Four of them. And they died. You know, and they were my mentors. So there are no more excuses for me to drink. You know, I know you can go through about anything in life and not have to pick up a drink. You know, I know, and my sponsor told me this, no matter what life throws at me, if I get hooked in with the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's hardly a life experience that you can go through that somebody else hasn't already gone through and will share their experience with you. You know, I'm so grateful, you know, for the life I have today. You know, I was told if I work the steps, you know, my life will change, and that's been my experience. A lot of times I don't see it, you know, and I don't work this program perfectly, and I have character defects, and they come out. But you know what? I ask God on a regular basis in the morning to remove my character defects. Step 6 and 7, you know, the most least work steps in the program. It's important for someone like me, you know, to ask for help, to concentrate on my character defects, to let the day happen rather than make the day happen. That line works really well for me. You know, I am self-employed, so there's a little bit of a balancing act, but I know that when, you know, the bottom line, you know, the acceptance prayer, I memorized that when I had about, you know, 6 months sobriety or 3 months. I know that when I am disturbed, you know, I need not look so much at what's going on around me, in the world around me, as what's going on with me and in my inner feelings and thoughts and feelings, you know. Again, they gave me special projects on feelings when I was at that rehab center. You know, because I kept writing stuff and they'd say, that's a thought. You know, and my feeling was, and then when I got home, you know, I had to go through another program. You know, I got multiple certificates, you know. And the program, you know, the nice way people like to say is anger management. Well, you know what? There's a different name for it. I guess I won't say it tonight. It's not anger management. You know, it is, but it's not. There's a different name for it. And the first thing, the first night I'm in there, you know, this guy, he just dismisses feelings, you know. Up goes my hand, and I said, look, you son of a bee, I just spent $13,600 to understand that I have feelings, you know, and you can't tell me that they're not important, you know. Maybe that's why I worked this time, too. I had to pay cash money when I went to that rehab center. So my big book, you know, it's sort of like gold-plated, you know. I don't know, you know, I don't take a lot of credit for my sobriety. You know, I give credit where credit's due, and that's to God. You know, I do the footwork. You know, I try to keep myself busy. I truly believe, you know, that for this alcoholic, an idle mind is the devil's workshop, so it's important that I stay, you know, that I stay busy. You know, I do what I do. Me and my wife, our relationship is completely different than it was at one time. We're in the process now of moving her mother down from Stockton to Fresno because of health issues. That's why she couldn't be here tonight. And if we weren't sober, there's no way that we would be there to do stuff like that. You know, my sponsor's going through chemotherapy treatments right now. And I learned within the last few weeks what it truly means to give it yourself. You know, we're macho males. He's not going to tell me that he needs something. So my wife says, think of something and get over to his house. So I bring him root beer float. He likes it. His cancer's in his tongue. He can't eat that freaking root beer float. But you know what? That's not what's important. You know, it's an excuse for me to be there for him. And it breaks my heart, you know. The last time I spoke at a meeting was about 3.5 years ago on New Year's Eve. Me and my wife spoke together up in Oakhurst on New Year's Eve. She woke up that morning blind in her left eye. It ended up being a detached retina. I've learned, you know, my sister has had 2 strokes since I've been sober. What I've learned, you know, I have tools today. I've learned I can pray and pray and pray and pray and pray, but as long as I'm telling God what to do, you know, it doesn't work. Because, and it usually takes me 3 days, you know, before I can say, you know what, how about if I just say, you know, God, help me to handle whatever your will is, or give somebody else the strength to handle, you know, your will be done, not mine. You know, I've learned, you know, because my mind says, I'm not being selfish, I'm praying for someone else. But the reality is I'm telling God what to do, and that doesn't work, and it doesn't give me any peace. You know, and that's one word, I guess that's what I'll close on. You know, that's one word that sort of sums up what sobriety can mean for someone like me, you know, is some peace. You know, other people call it serenity. That's a pretty hoity-toity word for me, you know, but I can understand peace and calm. And thank you all very much, you know, for 12-step meeting tonight, being here and listening to me. So, thanks.